I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation. Today's show, Harvest on Buford Highway.
Well, I know that highway like I know my hand. Yes, I know that highway like I know the back of my hand. Running from up Wisconsin way down to no man's land.
There are highways, and then there's Buford Highway. This colorful, multi-ethnic road transports us to another world. With over 1,000 immigrant-owned businesses, it's the city's international trade route serving up the most culturally diverse slice of life Atlanta has to offer. My guests today are Jack Halpern, chairman of Halpern Enterprises.
We've witnessed firsthand the power of community, of people working together. I think no one appreciates life in America like an immigrant to this country. Hopefully that will broaden our appreciation of what's important in life and help us be better business people, but better people as well.
Harold Shen, who, along with his family, owns and operates the Buford Highway Farmers Market.
And I'll give you an example of what goes through my mind sometimes. Sometimes I'm hungry. Okay, and so I can eat anything in the store. So what do I eat? You know, and sometimes I just kind of like, well, have I tried this? And like, I'll open it up or, you know, and I'll try something maybe that I haven't tried before or, you know, just because I've never got around to that section of the aisle, or we tend to maybe be habitually eat the same things over and over again. And it's just kind of interesting in that sense. It's just like I can go anywhere and try anything. And sometimes I have done that. Sometimes it's like, I don't really like that. but other times it's like, wow, this is really good. I didn't know.
Greg Best, co-owner of Holman & Finch, bartender and co-host of Feed Radio.
I love going there and seeing the tons of iterations of sugars, you know, and sweetening agents and fruits and spices. I mean, those things can all find their way into drinks, you know, as easily as they can find their way into cooking. And there is an excitement to play that mystery basket game. Like, I don't even know how to pronounce this, so I better buy two of them and figure out how to make them into a drink. You know, it's a great exercise and a great challenge.
And Chef Linton Hopkins, the 2012 James Beard Award winner, co-owner of Restaurant Eugene and Holman & Finch, and co-host of Feed Radio.
Buford Highway is a perfect example of differences celebrated.
Where variety is the spice of life, baby.
This is stuff we care about. It's actually who we are. It's not just a hobby. It's, I dream about this stuff.
She said, why do you have to do it? Why are you such a fool? I can't resist to try something new.
I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Harvest on Buford Highway.
Why you such a fool? I can't resist to try something new.
I think we should just start the conversation.
All right.
I'm particularly interested in how you and your family ended up on Buford Highway.
Well, my father moved his office from an apartment complex in southwest Atlanta to Buford Highway in the mid-1960s, at which time Buford Highway was just a two-lane road and just beginning to evolve as a residential corridor with development of apartment complexes. So he purchased a shopping center out near what is now 285. 285 didn't exist at that time, but he thought that because Buford Highway was a primary north-south commuting route to the suburbs out in Gwinnett County, that it had a future. And as with so many decisions he made in life, this proved to be a good one. But obviously the neighborhood has evolved over the years, and it has become a very ethnically diverse community. And so we've had to change our tenant mix over time in order to appeal to the changing demographics of the area.
Well, I just want to let our listeners know real quick, as chairman of Halpern Enterprises, you all own a number of properties that people know about. Terra, where Terra Cinemas is, Amsterdam Walk, as two main in-town examples. But you also have a significant amount of property on Buford Highway. When your family got into the business and when your father started there, what was that demographic like? What did it look like?
Well, Doraville was like a small country town that just happened to be next door to Atlanta. Reminds me of Mayberry. It had local entrepreneur, store owners, merchants, and it was a friendly community in which people tended to know each other. And truthfully, the city hasn't changed all that much, particularly in terms of the political leadership of the town. Still reflects a lot of the old-time residents and constituents that were present 40 and 50 years ago, when Doraville was dominated by the GM plant and was a corridor for commuters.
What would you say are the major pieces to that evolution in the way of diversity?
Going back about 20 years or more, we were approached by a Korean entrepreneur who wanted to open a restaurant in our shopping center. And we had a space that we'd had difficulty keeping filled up, so we decided to take a chance with him, even though he didn't have a long history of being in business or a long credit history. And he worked hard and was successful. A few months later, he brought his brother-in-law in, who wanted to open a Korean-American bookstore next door to his restaurant. And again, the space came available, and we decided to take a chance, and the bookstore was successful. Over time, I guess, word spread within that community, and as spaces came available, Asian American entrepreneurs would approach us about renting it. And at one point, we had to make a decision as to whether this would be good long term for our property or not. At that point, I made a trip to California to visit Koreatown, which is in Los Angeles. And in Koreatown, I became convinced that if I, in fact, went along with leasing additional space to Asian immigrant entrepreneurs, that it would be the best thing that ever happened to us as landlords. And the keys to it were a large grocery store, a bank that catered to Asian entrepreneurs, and restaurants. So if you had those elements, the area was likely to succeed as the Asian shopping district. And in fact, that has proven to be the case.
Your your father came over here and as an immigrant and was a successful entrepreneur. Is there any like part of you that remembered that and gave these folks a chance, or what was it?
Well, I guess we had some sensitivity to the immigrant experience because that was our family's immediate history. I mean, we understood some of the challenges that immigrants face in terms of trying to establish credit, but we also knew that America represented the future for them and their families, and that they were going to work hard and do whatever was necessary to be successful. So you might say we were sensitive to it, but on the other hand, it was really just good business on our part because we were taking chances with people who were motivated to be successful. The next generation is adapting quickly to life in America, and we don't know what the future of these ethnically oriented stores and restaurants will be, because the next generation doesn't necessarily want to own and work in the stores that their parents have helped to create and nourish. And the older generation wants to make sure that their children get good educations so that perhaps they don't have to work as hard or in the same businesses that they founded.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Harvest on Buford Highway, brought to you by Perkins & Will.
This is a big subject for me because Buford Highway represents to me the finest in cuisine and the worst in cuisine. And not in the worst because of, hey, that just doesn't taste good. But let's talk about the positive first. Cuisine never stops changing and morphing and moving. And the more we have cultures coming together in this mishmash and creating new definitions of what is Southern food, for example, I think Buford Highway is a key element. And here we find all these different cultures in the American South. And the best ingredients they can buy are, you know, cabbage and kale and this wonderful world of greens, chicken from Georgia. They're part of the food here. And so you're seeing some wonderful mixing of cultures happening to where the Southern food is not about a museum piece in the past. Southern food now means Korea. Southern food means Vietnam and a great culture of Chinese cooks and Hispanic cooks up the corridor of cooking whole pigs and roasting chickens. And that's just amazing. It's introducing a world of ingredients and flavors and bringing cultures together. I think being anchored by the CDC there is a great sort of metaphor. It's an international zone right here in Atlanta, Georgia. It's one of our treasures.
Is that why chefs love to go dine up at Buford Highway?
You bet. New ingredients. But the other side, of course, is that chefs and cooks are broke. We don't get paid much, to evidence to the contrary, and it's inexpensive. And this is the other side I really want to talk about Buford Highway, and I don't want to sound like I'm some, I won't eat that food, because I do. But if you're buying a bunch of food which could feed really a family of six, and you've only spent $5, we need to have a serious discussion about where that food is from. Mm-hmm. And we need to have a discussion about what is the valuation of food. And this is a big issue. And I don't want to bring us all down on this topic, but the food should cost more. And we shouldn't just go there in this idea of, hey, it's cheap eats. Because you know what happens when we as consumers say we demand cheap from our food? Some bad things. Things that my mom hates me bringing up. But I know where food comes from. I go to slaughterhouses and things like that. I know how animals are treated. I know what goes in the soil. We need to elevate the discussion of how do we say to people there, charge more money?
But, you know, speaking to what Linton said and the whole idea of new ingredients, even beyond the new ingredients, it's really, for me, it's really inspiring to go up and down Buford, not just as far as experiencing these different flavors, But what I really love doing is going into these different restaurants and seeing just the theater that is each of these places, because they all have extremely dynamic and in some cases uncomfortable layouts. You go in and not a single thing is written in English. I love the adventure of it, and I love the fact that it forces me to think about a kind of different language. You have to really think about how you interact with people, how you are being perceived as a person in the restaurant, as a customer. And part of that, I think, informs what I do behind a bar really well. To be a great bartender, I feel like you need to understand people and you need to make them comfortable. You need to make everyone feel like they're protected, when they sit at your bar. And putting yourself into those situations, I think, helps give you the tools to do that.
Well, Chef, let's talk about the cuisine for a moment on Buford Highway. Congratulations. You just won a James Beard Award.
Thanks.
A high honor and well-deserved. I think that the listener would love to hear, not only where do you go when you go up to Buford Highway, but how do you select a place? Because, there's pho like 2 through 9,008.
For me, I love going up and grabbing dim sum with the kids. I think dim sum is one of the best ways to experience Buford Highway. First, it's the ultimate fast food. I mean, you're eating within 15 seconds of sitting down, and you already have too much food on your table within 30 seconds. Or you feel bad that you're having to say no to these really nice women rolling around with these carts of great food. The things, like when I go to Buford Highway, I'm the guy that wants to order the dishes that haven't been translated into English. And you'll see some of those on the menu. You're like, I'll have this. And they'll look at you funny that you're ordering it. And that, we were talking about the sense of adventure. I love that stuff, because the part that I really love, and this is why Holman Finch has a menu the way it is this economy of nothing is wasted. And you don't waste food. If you're going to use pig, you have to figure out a way to use every part of it, because it costs money, and you need, in the restaurant business, you need to sell it, And so that's where all these great food cuisines came up, is this culture of parts.
Now, day-to-day life is a menu with one item. Week after week, tastes the same. But sometimes 1 minute has magic within it, if we might call it by name. I'd say that life is sane, mildly inviting. Business gain always is delighting. Now and then, something more exciting enters in. You'll find that temperature is the early warning. You may meet some freezing winter morning, but the heat is California dawning in your brain. And you thought life was sane, so light the flame, lest she wanders past you. What's her name? Insomnia will ask you. Are you game to do the things you never thought you'd do? Let's see how well you move to break the ice. 'Cause underneath that ice, you may find spice.
Oh, of course, you're going to have some hit and misses when it comes to...
That's part of the adventure.
If you're going to get into some interesting cold tripe salads that, they're going to use intestines and things. I mean, we call them chitlins in the South. But where I get a little sort of like, whoa, I don't know if I would choose that again, is when they serve them all jellied and cold as salads. Like, I love chitlins, but I like them spicy and hot and crispy, and that it's the textural thing. If I'm eating tripe a lot of times, I like it braised with bright acid. But it's part of the fun. Again, you're eating at your own risk. This is not, when we go out to eat in restaurants, everything's not about an online review, or, you know, you actually are a guest in another country in a lot of ways. And so I think the best way to go there is with a spirit of adventure, enthusiasm, a sense of saying please and thank you a lot.
When you decide to walk the path of food and beverage, it is your responsibility to accept the fact that you are forever a student. There is more out there than any of us could ever expose ourselves to in one lifetime.
Continuing education. I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the best places to go on Beaufort Highway as a cook or someone who considers themselves a foodie and just geeks out about the stuff is the Beaufort Highway Farmer's Market.
Yeah.
It's amazingly fresh, bright produce. I mean, beautiful little baby cabbages and cilantro in many forms. You really opens your eyes to coriander and this idea of cilantro is not just what we think from a Central American experience and salsas. It's long leaf. You're getting a lot of different flavors. There's a lot of interesting gourds in there. What's so great as well is you can walk through the meat section and get every part. It's one of the few places you could originally get things like pork belly, sliced, where you could buy tripe, where you can buy liver, for example. And it's all right there. And also you can walk aisles and hit a bunch of different cuisines. So I love the Japanese aisle there. I love Japanese food and I love Japanese ingredients. But they've got a variety of soy sauce, and you can start finding your own soy sauce that you love. And beautiful fresh fish, you know. It's a place, one of the few places you can find this here where you can actually buy live blue crabs. And that's amazing. I think it's fun to play the mystery basket game with yourself at home and cooking and say, I'm going to just figure out taro.
Or I don't even know how to cut this fruit open, let alone.
Yeah, exactly. You start goring into it with a paring knife. You're like, is this good?
It's a long, lonely highway when you're traveling all alone. And it's a mean old world when you've got no one to call your own. And you pass through towns too small to even have a name.
My name's Harold Shim. I'm the owner, along with my family, of the Beaufort Highway Farmers Market, which is in Doraville. We've been there for many, many years and been through a lot of changes. And the name is Farmers Market, but as probably a lot of people are aware, if you've lived in this city, it's not exactly what you would consider a farmer's market relative to what they would be called in other cities or small markets where people get together on weekends and actually see the farmers themselves come in. It's more of what the proper category would be a specialty grocer. And for us, our primary focus is ethnic foods, multi-ethnic foods, so which would include Asian, Hispanic, Latin America, South America, you know, West Africa, the Caribbean, Eastern Europe, former Soviet republics, and we're getting into some Scandinavian type foods. Anything and everything that kind of it interests us, and we think that it has a market.
I'm curious to go back a step and talk about the family business, because that seems to be a component to Beaufort Highway, these families, family business. Can you tell us about yours?
My father immigrated to the United States in late 60s, 68, 69. He had actually gotten out of the South Korean Army, and he had trained as what was called a chicken sexer. At the time, there were lots of Korean and Japanese trained to do that, and they would actually migrate to other parts of the world where they're in demand for the poultry business.
And what is that job?
What they do is they actually determine the sex of the baby chick when it hatches, because at the time, I don't know what it is now, but at the time there was no mechanical or chemical way to do that. You know, so it's not very pleasant, but it was like a technical skill that you could make a lot of money, but just it was very unpleasant. And so that's one thing that my father chose to do, because he realized at an early time one of the things he wanted to do was to have his own business. And he wasn't sure what it was, but he realized that to do that he needed capital. And so he needed a way to earn a lot of money and save a lot of money. So he did this in France for a year, and he decided he really didn't like it there. He then came to the United States, and as different than many other Asian immigrants at that time, he didn't settle on the East or West Coast. You know, he tried Nebraska, and we lived in Alabama briefly, and then we finally settled in Georgia.
So you all started with an Asian market, right?
Yeah, it was the mid-70s. My father started with a Asian market. In fact, at that time, it was called Asian Trading. And it was, to my knowledge, the first Asian market, Asian food market in Atlanta. And because the Asian population at that time was so small, it actually incorporated all Asian cuisine, anything that he could import or get his hands on or get from New York, Chicago, or, you know, LA, or wherever he could get it. And it was very popular, not just with the Asian community, which at that time was minuscule. You know, everybody knew everybody, you know, but also for people or passersby. Oh, what's this? Oh, this is kind of interesting. I've never seen this before. Or what is it? You know, and snacks or smells or, you know, flavors that they've never seen before. And we're talking about 1974. So for Atlanta, that was probably very, very novel. For most people, an Asian dining experience was a local Chinese restaurant. And for most people at that time, if you met somebody who spoke Spanish during the early 70s, that was they were Cuban or Puerto Rican, because there was no Mexican population here. So the level of diversity relative to what we have today was much, much less. But Buford Highway in general, it's kind of maybe coincidental. It's my father's first store was at a location called, at the time, Broadview Plaza, which is now Lindbergh Plaza. It was torn down and rebuilt. And that had been there, I think, maybe since the 60s. There was a Kmart there. There's the old Southeastern Music Hall, where's now Sidney Marcus Boulevard. And that is actually where Buford Highway terminates. So in a sense, that one end of Buford Highway is where a lot of this immigrant kind of ethnic spark, one of the places where it started. But it's changed a lot because I've lived in the area. I went to high school, in the area. And in some ways it was declining, and, you know, probably like in the 80s and 90s. And in other ways, it picked up, the vibrancy picked up primarily from newly arrived immigrants. And so that's how it's transitioned. And now it's unmistakable. Like when you go down Buford Highway, it has a distinct character.
If you would take us on a little tour through the aisles and you know, describe visually what we would.
Well, I would say probably what's challenging for the initial shopper is it's not laid out like a. Well, I'll say this, like a lot of other specialty grocery stores, it's not laid out like a typical grocery store. The similarities for us is the periphery are going to be perishables. So first thing you hit is produce, and then you're going to hit meat and seafood. And as most people know now, including large firms like, you know, Walmart and stuff, among ethnic shoppers, those perishables actually form a greater percentage of their shopping dollar. If produce isn't your primary focus, you know, if your primary focus are things like baked goods and deli items and prepared foods, it makes more sense to hit people up with that first, you know, because those are more for a lot of people, those are more primitive level reactions because you smell things baking and, you know, savory odors and things like that, that would be the primary portion of your meal. I remember reading an article about a guy who specializes in design, and he just happened to explain a grocery store. And he said the ideal grocery store, in one sense, would be one single aisle about 3 miles long that the customer, once they start in one end, would have to pass by every single item, and then they would check out, because they would literally see every single item in the store. Now, obviously, that psychologically, that wouldn't be a very satisfying shopping experience, but that's one end of the continuum, you know, and you have many, many different solutions. I only have one store, you know, so I only have one thing to, and so in a sense, it's kind of like, hey, you're coming over to my house. Yeah, it may look kind of weird, but this is where I live. And
you all have 100,000 square feet.
Yeah, 100,000 square feet, and which is now about par for what most large grocery stores, if you look at even chain stores now, where maybe a couple decades ago, somebody would open up maybe a 50,000 square foot. Now, probably unless it's in an urban environment, they're going to be 60, 70 plus if you look at them. And so the formats have gotten bigger. And of course, we're a driving town, so it kind of makes sense here. Maybe not as much sense in some place like, you know, in Manhattan and New York. But what that does provide is it provides the capability to pack a lot in the store. And even in the most, you go to a Super Walmart, you're going to find ethnic items that 15, 20 years ago were exotic and very difficult to find. And now they're commonplace, you know, in a lot of stores. I mean, it's everywhere. You see this blending, and people who work for a corporate America, food America, they're actively hunting these things down. They're looking for, they're actually sending out to, just like, for example, like a fashion house will send people out in the street, go to Soho, go someplace, see what kids are wearing, you know. And it's the same thing. They'll send people out, go to these ethnic neighborhoods, go to these stores, see what people are eating, bring stuff back. You know, we want to see if what's the next big thing. For us, we don't have a corporate staff and you know, thousands of people and, you know, million-dollar consultants and things like that. So for us, it's, you know, what we like and what we read about. And when we talk to people, we talk to friends of friends, customers, and they share experiences. And whoever is involved in our life, talk about food.
And are you the type that finds something that, let's say, you really like and mm-hmm. go and research the history of it and where it came
from?
Yeah,
because and I think more people do that now because there's a growing consciousness about food, obviously for things like health reasons, for environmental reasons, social, political reasons, but also for lack of a better meaning. It's another portion of your modern life that people can find meaning in the sense that how is what I'm eating somehow connected to other people, other cultures? What's the origin of what I'm eating? Where does it come from? And just by knowing those things, you feel something different about what you're eating. If you go looking for it, you will find it.
I'd like to thank my guests today, Jack Halpern, Harold Shin, Greg Best, and Chef Linton Hopkins. Of course, I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Perkins & Will, for whom we are very thankful. And of course, this Thanksgiving, we're also extremely grateful to you, our listeners. Sidewalk Radio exists to create a conversation, and we hope that yours around the holiday table this year is filled with love and joy. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Thanks so much for all, and we'll see you next month.